Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmers.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. We have a very timely, in terms of when we are recording this, a very timely title for today. Judy, tell folks the title.
It's Teshuvah and Couples Therapy.
So for folks who don't know the Hebrew word teshuvah, we'll talk about it in considerable detail in just a little while. But first, a word from our exciting things that we have to share with you. Starting with, what should we start with today, Judy?
How about we start with our sponsor?
Let's do that. Let's start with our sponsor.
Yeah, why don't we start with our sponsor today, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, filled with tales of love and lust. And it's spicy and it's sexy and it's hot. And if you want a hot erotic experience of reading, Blue Tent.
Absolutely. And let me put in a plug for some presentations we are scheduled to do. We are recording this on September 22nd, 2023. On October 15th at Ohavi Tzedek Synagogue in Burlington, Vermont, if you happen to be around then. And you can go to their website and find the listing for this and register for it. We are doing a joint presentation called Jewish Perspectives on Sex, Sacred Sex and Sexual Midrash. And that will feature, I'll be talking about a lot of the concepts that I've written about the role of sex in couples' lives and intimacy more generally. And Judy will be reading from Laria's book and answering questions about Laria's book. Isn't that remarkable how skilled you are at answering questions about Laria's book?
Well, Laria wasn't available.
Laria wasn't available.
Because I did the audio.
And Laria just trusts you to know, I would venture to say,
everything she knows about Laria.
Yes. You are just like so tight.
We are intimately connected.
Yes. So folks, if that doesn't tell you what you want to hear, you can also go to Laria's website, lariazilber.com. For those of you just doing the audio of this, that's LariaZilber, Laria Zilber, all one word, lariazilber.com. Go there and you'll be able to see some videos of Laria being interviewed.
By you.
By me, curiously. Right. You weren't available for that interview. I don't understand.
Well, why shouldn't I be there?
Well, Laria's not available when you're doing a presentation and you're not available when Laria's being interviewed. I can't figure that one out. But nevertheless, perhaps some of our viewers can figure that one out.
Perhaps they can. Clark Kent thing going on there.
It could be. When I think about it, I've never seen you and Laria in the same room, and I know you both very well.
Huh.
Very well. I haven't told you, but that's another story. Anyway, moving right along. I don't really have to do teshuvah for my very intimate relationship with Laria. I think you'd probably be okay with it.
I think I would.
I think you would, yes. So, moving right along.
Let's plug some other books.
Let's plug some other books.
Right. We have Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back, or as we call it, the book that launched this podcast.
Absolutely. It's been out now for 3.5 years, and that, you know, people still seem to be buying the thing, which is kind of nice.
It is nice.
And my more recent book.
And yes, we have It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
You know, I was looking at our podcast statistics. I think I mentioned this to you the other day.
Yep.
And I noticed if we go over our, this is number, I think is 132, something like that. And if we go over all of them, the most popular ones in the top 10, there are two of them. One of them is called It's Not About Communication. And the other is called Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong. And I realized you could say, well, that is kind of why I titled the book the way I did, because those are
so
popular.
That makes sense.
That was not mere coincidence.
That makes sense.
So let us get into our topic for today, Teshuvah and couples therapy. Would you like to define for folks or talk
some
about
what is the word? Well, we might have different takes on Teshuvah.
I hope we will. It'll be more interesting if we do. Go for it.
So Teshuvah means like returning, right?
The literal word in Hebrew is
literal
return.
Is returning.
It's the same word you use for answer.
Yeah,
like to answer a
right.
question, teshuvah. An answer to a question is a teshuvah.
But, you know, we bring it up this time of year because it is in between the holidays of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, two Jewish holidays, and it's during the what's called the Aseret Yimei Teshuvah, the 10 days of teshuvah, repentance.
Yes.
Which is another meaning of teshuvah. So Yom Kippur is the day when we confess all our sins as a collective, and individually and collective. And we ask people to forgive us for anything we might have wronged them during the year. And then we spend the day in prayer and contemplation at the synagogue, asking God to look favorably upon us and write us and seal us in the book of life for another year. And basically, it's a taking stock of yourself.
Well, and indeed, in terms of the taking stock, that's a very important part of getting to that sense of teshuva, mm-hmm. of returning. And it's, you know, I love the fact that the word used in Hebrew means return, because the implication is you start off, you know, one of God's children. We start off good. You know, we all exist in the world as a valid entity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's when people will say, like, God does not make mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all are valid to be who we are. We also all mess up in various ways.
Yes, we do.
Big and small, right?
Yes,
Lord
we
knows.
Do.
We all know that. And we've all been hurt by other people messing up in various ways, big and small. And teshuva is about returning to that sense of who you are deeply in a way that will let you, ideally, repair relationships.
Exactly.
Which, of course, is the connection to couples therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was it that suddenly seized me? I think yesterday I had this idea, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Of course it was yesterday. I can tell you why. You know, aside from the fact that, of course, this is right between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We're very aware of all this stuff in the Jewish year, those of us who are observant of those things. And I had a couple of sessions yesterday, as I do most of my work days. I have various sessions.
Let's hope so.
Indeed, I'm still in biz. And both of these sessions, and I think I thought of this after the first, and then it came up again in the second, involved people who hurt each other.
Yeah.
That's what it was about. It was which of course, when I think about the couples who see me for couples therapy, I suppose that's rare indeed are the couples who haven't hurt each mm-hmm. other. You know, what do they need a therapist mm-hmm. for? One way or another. You know, there's
right.
lots of variations. In one case, it was someone who had cheated on his wife. These are folks that I'd known, not for a super long time, but I'd known for a while, you know, a number of months. And, or maybe about a year and a half, this folks. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I've known them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been making considerable progress. There had been sort of a breach earlier on in their relationship where the man had moved out for, you know, it said he was not happy and moved out for a bit, which really kind of hurt the woman because she didn't want him to do that. And while they were separated, he had had some sort of not well-defined relationships with another woman that certainly were outside the bounds of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they were hurt by that, but they were kind of processing that, understanding, well, they were broken up sort of, and, you know, they were working on that stuff. And things had gotten a lot better. And I saw them, about a week before. And
yeah.
things were where they were, and they decided, all right, we'll meet again in a month. And then I got an email yesterday or the day before, I think it was yesterday morning, actually, saying, could you meet with us, like, right away?
Uh-huh.
And I had an opening, so I uh-huh. slotted them in the opening. And sure enough, I didn't expect this or not expect it, but they were both really hurt people. And
yeah.
they were, he said, and he was very, very remorseful, and he said he had cheated on her recently. And obviously that involves lying. And
right.
there were other complications I won't go into, but there were other complications as well that really might affect his job. And so she was devastated by the fact of his having done it. And it was interesting because where they were at, they were in the shock phase. You know, usually
yeah.
when I meet folks when there's infidelity, it's been a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they get around to setting up an appointment or by the time I have an opening, it's usually been a couple of weeks. This is one where she just found out about it the night before.
Oh, wow.
So she said that she's still in the shock phase, somewhat numbed, and there was such sadness
yeah.
in the room. And so, you know, as I say, usually I'm not dealing with folks who are in the intense shock phase.
Mm-hmm.
But here we were, and so I was, you know, working with them
I'm
where they
surprised
were
surprised it was not anger, too.
Well,
was
is
there anger involved?
Not, surprisingly, not as much as you might think.
Huh.
And part of that was the work they had already done processing the earlier stuff. Don't get me wrong. She wasn't feeling like, well, I can handle this, no biggie. No,
right,
she
right,
was
right.
really very hurt.
Yeah.
And again, she said somewhat in shock.
Yeah.
But she said it isn't even so much about the anger at this point. And that's, again, because she'd already had reason to not be sure she could trust him.
Mm-hmm.
But they had been getting better. And so it was in that place of faith, really, that I often talk about in talking about infidelity. She was at this place of saying, And he was too, by the way. They were both saying, we got to figure this out. And he, in particular, said, I got to figure out why I'm doing this. It's crazy. Because he obviously loves his wife and doesn't want to lose his family. And why would he do something like that? You know, he's sabotaging something precious to him. And that's not an unusual thing that people do. I'm not justifying it, but it's not an unusual phenomenon. So here we are, and we're talking about these things. And I said, and have I said this sort of thing before? Yeah, I'm sure I have. But anyway, I said, you know, you happen to be consulting me at a really interesting part of the Jewish year. Now, these people are not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to comment on that phenomenon in a moment, by the way. The bit about my bringing up faith stuff, knowing full well, they know I'm Jewish and I know they're not.
Okay.
That's an interesting phenomenon right there. I'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
Anyway, so I said, are you familiar with the Jewish year? And, you know, like most, you know, people who aren't Jewish, not deeply,
mm-hmm.
you know, they'd heard of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I said, well, we happen to be right in between. And this happens to be a time of year where we are deeply into introspection and talking about things we've done wrong and trying to find a way to feel forgiven. And what happens in the Jewish liturgical cycle is Yom Kippur exists so that you can feel cleansed of that. You know, and I'm remembering when I thought of that thought to say that, to bring that up, it's when the man said he just felt completely dissolving in guilt and shame.
Mm-hmm.
He just felt so horribly guilty, and, you know. And I was commenting, well, of course he feels guilty because he did something wrong. I mean, that's appropriate. But that notion that, you know, that he was expressing the sense of how can it be possible, he didn't say it in these words, but how can it be possible for him to feel like he's a decent person again, having hurt someone he loves this way?
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, every religion has its, using a funny term, has its technology of forgiveness. And I asked them, you know, what were your backgrounds? And his was Catholic.
Yeah.
And he wasn't much of a practicing Catholic anymore.
So it's not like he's going to confession every week.
No, he's not. But I said, you know, it's amazing, speaking as a respectful outsider, I'm not Catholic, obviously, but as a respectful outsider, that particular technology of forgiveness is amazingly powerful.
Yeah.
That you get to go in a ritual way, talk to a priest, and I think it's, personally, I think it's kind of cool that the priest doesn't even have to be a particularly great guy.
Yeah.
He just has to be a priest.
And listen.
And listen, yes. I mean, it's great if he's skilled.
Right.
But the neat thing is, when he pronounces what you need to do and then pronounces absolution,
mm-hmm.
it's not because of his own merit.
Right.
It's because he's in a chain that goes all the way back to Jesus, you know, from a Catholic perspective. Mm-hmm. And so that's powerful. And they were so moved by the notion that forgiveness was even possible. And then the woman was saying, you know, I was in the shower this morning realizing we need more than just us. We need this, some sense of a higher power. These folks obviously are not, like, they're certainly not fundamentalists.
Yeah.
They're not particularly religious, but they're recognizing that sense that when you're in that kind of depth of pain, that's when you need whatever you call God. That's when you mm-hmm. need some kind of sense of, you know, basic affirmation that you're a valid person.
Well, you know, rituals, I think, really help and serve up purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're lost, it really helps to be able to turn to something,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's going to that confession and hearing the priest tell you, or whether it's going to the synagogue, as we'll be doing, and, you know, beating your breast and saying, I sinned and please pardon me, or mm-hmm. whatever it is, or going to people that you've wronged and asking for their forgiveness. That whole ritual thing, it does give you a context other than just like floundering.
Exactly.
Because I see so many people that don't have any type of religious upbringing or are not affiliated with anything. And even in areas like death, they're kind of at a loss what to
That's
do
the
with
one I was
that
just
mourning.
Thinking. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. That I see that a lot.
Yeah.
It's the to have available, you know, what I've often explained to people, you know, what I value is certainly in Jewish traditions and in other religions traditions too. You don't have to make it up on the spot at a time when you're not doing well, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you can just mourn. You can just do what you need to do. It was really interesting. So I do want to comment, as I said, on this phenomenon. Here I am, and I started knowing full well they're not Jewish. And it was almost important that they were Jewish, saying, hey, let me tell you something about the Jewish year here. Not because I'm trying to proselytize and say they should be Jewish, which I am not by any means, but because I'm invoking something. And what I find fascinating, and I remember I mentioned this to you yesterday, and I think you said something, you know, how in effect, I forgot exactly how you said it, but it was a great question. It was like, you know, how is that different from, like, what if they went to a Christian counselor? Or, you know, what if they went to their priest?
Right.
You know?
Well, because that was one of the things that you said, that that people don't often hear this from their therapist.
Exactly. Yeah.
I said, unless they're going to a specifically Christian therapist.
Exactly. And what I find fascinating about that is folks often, you know, over the years have said they have gone to their pastor or they've gone to a Christian counselor or whatever. And the problem is, when you bring it up as part of the dogma, it doesn't have the power it has when some total outsider from a completely different context is bringing this up and saying, you got that too. You use different language and different, you know, you have different features of it, but you've got that too. It made it available to them in ways I think a priest would have had a harder time doing. I could be wrong about that, but it's, you know, it's that context. It's so not fundamentalist when I'm so not saying you should be Jewish, because I'm not saying that, you know, as Jews about that, we don't go around saying other people should be Jewish. No, in fact, you know, I mean, I know there's controversy about the tradition that says you try to talk people out of it, but I sincerely, you know, why would somebody want to be Jewish if they're not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are reasons, they're good reasons. I mean, I absolutely respect people who have chosen to be Jewish. But it doesn't make you a better person. It does not make you a better person. You can be a good person with whatever religion you have. So, you know, why don't you go with the one that that you were, you know, you speak their language, you were raised in.
Well,
that, you know.
Yeah, but some people just don't like that. So, you know, maybe they want to find something else.
But it was so interesting because their reaction, of course, wasn't to say, oh, let me check out this Jewish stuff. It sounds good. And I didn't want it to be that.
That wasn't the point.
Yeah. But their reaction was to say, oh my God, we can actually invoke this sense that there is, you know, there is this axiomatic, well, what I call
there's
faith.
Or a pathway.
There's a pathway, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, my little motto, the seven words of our, you know, be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Okay. Yeah.
The faith part is all about that sense that we have unquestioned validity even when we mess up badly. And, of course, that's what this particular guy had done. He had messed up badly, but they emerged from that. It was obvious they felt so much, they felt like there's a path forward. And by the way, and I said this at the time, of course, none of this in any way presupposes that they're going to stay together.
Right.
She may well find that she cannot, you know, she can't trust him anymore, you know, without even having to be angry at him.
Yeah.
You know, she can forgive him and not trust him and still feel like, well, I can't do this anymore. But either way, they can heal.
Yeah, and also on the same idea, as you know, I did a webinar yesterday with Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik, and he has this series called Faith in Films, or Films in Faith. Anyway, so the kickoff yesterday was the movie Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think most of our listeners out there have probably seen the movie Groundhog Day.
You know, our demographic trends a bit older.
So, well, even younger people,
even
I know
younger,
my kids have seen
do.
It.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people have seen it. It's a great movie with Bill Murray and Andy McDowell. And if for the two of you who haven't seen the movie, Bill Murray is this burnt out, sarcastic, angry weatherman, and he's in Pittsburgh, and he's being sent to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania every year to cover the Groundhog Day. So he keeps waking up in the same day over and over. He's living this one day over and over
and
again.
And he's aware of it,
he's
which
aware
is an interesting
of
thing.
Nobody
he knows
else
it.
Is.
Yeah.
And at first it's a little bit kind of cool, but then it becomes a little creepy, and then he realizes that, like, I can, like, kill myself. I can rob banks. I can, you know, do all this horrible stuff. But as he's going through this process of living this same day over and over again, he starts becoming a better person and realizes that there's more to life than being angry and mean and putting people down And when he starts getting involved in the community and in people's lives, it's transformative.
It is. It is. And of course, Rabbi Soloveitchik. And you heard the seminar. I didn't hear that.
Yes,
So,
he said
yeah.
when he gets to the point when he finally blesses the day rather than curses the day, when he blesses the day, that's when he's able to move forward.
He escapes the curse. Yeah. And that's what that's about.
I'm all verklempt.
She's all verklempt. Yeah. For those of you who can't see, Judy's all verklempt. Now I'm getting
Well,
all
you can hear it in my voice too.
verklempt. Yeah, and it's really beautiful. I think I mentioned when you told me that yesterday, that reminds me of the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. As soon as he could bless life, the albatross falls from his neck. And it's that sense that teshuva is all about, that sense of being able to. Oh God, I'm gonna
Got a tissue.
It's being able to bless life. It's being able to recognize the beauty in life, even in the presence of inevitable suffering. That you can find. Well, I'm going to go back to Viktor Frankl. I've quoted a few times recently because I reread his book, A Man's Search for Meaning, recently. That you can find meaning in suffering, and that is that sense. That's how you escape the curse.
Well, it's funny. I know one of the things I've told you that I've been also listening to a podcast with Anderson Cooper on
Oh
grief,
yeah.
and a lot of his guests brought up Viktor Frankl and
Sure.
Man's Search for Meaning. That book came up in a lot of the
Yeah.
podcasts.
Yeah, I for listeners, I recommend it. I mean, it's, sort of like saying, I think Bach was a good composer. Everybody recommends, you don't need me to recommend it. But I will note, it's funny because I reread it for the first time in roughly 40 years. I think I read it when the 1982 edition came out or whatever it was. And it's dated. You know what I mean? It reads dated, but the core of meaning in there and his discussion of meaning is so, I find it so moving. And
Right, and for
this,
those not
yeah.
familiar with Viktor Frankl, he's a concentration camp survivor.
He survived Auschwitz, and the odds of that, he quoted the statistic in his book. I mean, if you think about the number of people who went where he went and came out of it alive, it was about 1 in 20 or something
Right,
like that. It was
and
like,
his family was killed, right?
his
His
family was
wife.
his wife, yeah, his wife died, and his parents as well.
Right.
And he only stayed. He could have come to the United States, but he only stayed in Vienna because his parents were there. So he had the chance to, right before the war started, he had the chance to get out before
Oh,
Kristallnacht,
wow.
actually, even. And but he stayed and ended up in Auschwitz, and gave the world that set of ideas. His branch of therapy he called logotherapy. That, some of that part is the dated part. He was a Vienna psychiatrist in the 1930s. So there was Freud and there was Adler and there was Viktor Frankl, a young man psychiatrist there, and he had his way of doing it, which was very much in relationship to their ways of doing it. And it kind of reads old, but the meaning part is really deep. So let me just throw in a couple other things about the notion of teshuva and couples therapy. So what is couples therapy all about? What is the point of it? There's many ways you could say that. Some people, what would you say? How would you say that? Like, what's couples therapy for?
Well, couples therapy is to improve your relationship. If it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be infidelity. It just could be, you're talking over each other. You're not listening to each other. And you might be listening, but you're not understanding the other's point of view. You're not taking it in. You're not empathizing with them. So I think the whole thing with teshuva and couples therapy is being able to recognize what you're doing and how it affects your partner. And how do you move on from that? And how do you heal the hurt that you may have caused that person and thereby doing damage to your relationship?
And I think that's where the role of teshuva in particular is particularly in those ways that people, well, that was the other couple I talked to yesterday around that where this came up, where different story was, didn't happen to be infidelity, but it was ways in which they had stopped being able to hear each other a lot. The wife's experience was that the husband would be, he would kind of lose his cool. There was no violence involved. She wasn't at physical risk, but he would lose his cool and not hear her and get angry at her And so she started being afraid to bring stuff up. And of course, then she realized, well, she doesn't have to be, because she's not at physical risk. She'd bring up how he talks. And of course, his experience was no matter what he said, it was wrong. He was saying it wrong. And so he became, and he was describing, they're both, as is true of the vast majority of the folks I work with, they're very insightful, you know. He was recognizing that, he any interaction with her he goes into, he's already like really tense. She picks that up and,
the anxiety level just built.
It builds and it cycles, it feeds on itself. So what he was recognizing for him was that what he carries with him from his childhood is deep, deep shame. He was constantly being shamed by his parents, put down in various ways. And he realized that makes it hard for him to hear when he's, I brought up my bit about the golden key that solves all, problems, which is the ability to be mildly annoyed, you know. It's funny, but it's also not a joke,
Right.
It's like, as opposed to taking that as this indictment of who you are or as this horrible thing, just to be able to hear your partner's a little out of sorts and so they're a little bit short with you and relax, That's not so easy when you're very hypersensitive to ways that somebody is viewing you as not good. So I've had lots of folks where that's the issue. Teshuva is all about, oddly enough, recognizing your own inherent worth. And then you can actually hear how you've hurt people in ways that are not, you don't get lost in the shame. And then you can actually apologize. You can't make a decent apology if you feel completely horrible about yourself. You can feel, to make an apology, you better feel guilty because otherwise you're not apologizing for anything. Of course you feel guilty, but to be able to say, oh my God, I am so sorry. I wish I hadn't done that. And I see I need to learn to not do that,
Right.
As opposed to, I'm sorry you were upset by that. the non-apology apology. I'm sorry you were so sensitive as to be offended by some completely innocent thing that I did that you're now blaming me for. That's a great apology.
Sorry you're such an idiot.
I'm sorry, yes, exactly. Even better. Right? Sorry you're such an idiot. Yeah, no, that's not an apology.
No, that's not an apology.
But, to make a genuine apology involves experiencing that sense that, oh my God, I've hurt someone I love.
Yeah,
I mean, if it's an apology to someone you love, and that's
hard. But really recognizing your complicity in it. Not just saying, oh, I feel bad I hurt them, but it's like, what does that say about me that I said something so mean?
Exactly. I was just reading, I forgot where it was, but I was just earlier today, I was just reading something online where they were talking about people who would, apologies. I think it was in the Times. It was some article about why famous people have a hard time apologizing. That's what it was. It was a column in the Times. And they were talking about how this apology that says, oh, that wasn't me. That wasn't, that's not me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it is you. And, when I've done things that I regret, they are me. They're not all of me. That's the important part. And so many of these people I'm working with where, they're so offended if somebody calls them on something. And what they'll say is, you think I'm all bad. What about, there was another session I had yesterday where somebody was saying, these themes come up a lot,
Well, that's your profession, honey. And that's why we're doing this podcast.
That's why we're doing it. So, a guy said, you just told me that the vast majority of the time we get along. And his wife is saying, yeah, I did tell you that. It's those times when I'm trying to bring up something with you that you get to be, you're so closed, you're so pig-headed about it. And he's feeling like that means she thinks he's a bad person. As opposed to, no, that means she wants him to hear that he's being a dick in particular circumstances. And that is him, And so when I've been a dick, if I'm saying, oh, that's not who I am.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's nonsense.
No, that is a part of who
that
you are.
That is a part of who I am. Frankly, it's a necessary part of everybody that we'd be capable of being a dick.
Of course.
So I get it. That's not a justification, but it means I better look at that. I better be willing to say, oh shit, I'm so sorry. That was the dick in me coming out. and I got to make sure that doesn't do it because that is not what I want to do. And that's a genuine, I think that, I don't know, does that read as a genuine apology to you?
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
Like, I quoted this in one of our podcasts probably a couple of years ago. I remember reading something related to the Me Too movement, and where some quasi-famous person was called on something, and instead of doing what they all do, which is, even if they acknowledge it, which many of them don't,
right,
but if they acknowledge it at all, saying, but that's not me. This was a guy who said, oh my God, this is me. And I am really sorry, and I better look at that, because yeah, I don't want to be that, but I apparently am, or was, and I better check that, you know, I better be careful. You know, the person, this came to the attention of the internet because the person who had been hurt by that noted, wow, that was a real apology. You know, it was so unusual. It didn't fix all the, you know, didn't undo everything, but it's like, hey, good. you're actually getting somewhere. It's mm-hmm. like, you heard me. And you actually realize, yeah, dude, that was you.
Yeah.
You know, and this was a guy, of course, isn't it always this way? This is a guy who was I think he was like an editor of some very much, you know, liberal type publication, where he would prize himself on being supportive of women.
Yeah.
So, you know, and indeed, in the organization, was very supportive of women, including this one particular young woman who he then hits on. And then is a dick to when she turns him down, you know? And so it's like, okay, you've got the idea of respect, but this was a failure of respect. This wasn't like an oversight. This was like, you think you respect women? You better look at that again,
yeah,
because you're not hitting on women. If you were in my humble opinion, I'm interested in yours as a woman, you know, I wouldn't hit on a woman in a professional context. I mean, assuming I was single,
yeah,
at all. If there was any hint of my being in a mentor sort of position at all. I mean, I wouldn't even think it. Never mind.
Well, you know, yes, but we know that happens a lot.
Yes, it does.
Lot.
And but I mean, the point being, of course it happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The point being that is not, you know, someone needs to look and say, oh, I thought I actually respected women. And that's not respecting women. And I'm not saying being attracted to women is disrespectful. No, of course, the heterosexual, right? Mm-hmm. I like women. You know mm-hmm. that. But you know, you have to actually be able to have genuine respect for someone's, you know, have some idea what would that be like for her. It's
sure.
essential empathy,
sure.
right? That's what, that's inherent in respect.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy showed, utterly failed to
yeah.
show that.
Yeah, yeah. Creates a very poor working environment.
Yeah. And well, and you know, this the Spanish soccer team, you know, scenario, have you been following that at all? You didn't know, well, it doesn't matter. But the guy who was the coach, I guess it was, who just forced a kiss on one of the players.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that.
And
yes.
doubled down. I
yeah.
mean, it not only didn't acknowledge,
yes.
but just, you know, and at least he was honest, I suppose. The
uh-huh.
doubling down implies there's nothing wrong with a man forcing a kiss on a woman who doesn't want it.
Right.
And most of us would say, when you put it in those terms, that doesn't sound very respectful, does it? There are others who would
well,
say,
well, you know, women have put up with that crap for years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, It's only recently in modern times that women have any agency. You know,
yeah.
we were once the property
yeah.
of men.
Well, and I've noted
and
this.
And in some countries still are.
Well, you know, I've noted this statistic. I remember when I was preparing my, you know, Reigniting the Spark, I was
mm-hmm.
researching that. It was not until the early 1970s that the last state of the United States made marital rape a possibility.
Right.
Because prior to that, it was an oxymoron.
Right.
If they were married, the man had a right to sex with his wife, and she couldn't turn him down. So if he forced it on him, that's, you know, tough for her.
Yeah.
And that changed, but that recently.
Yeah.
You know,
and you know, the expectation was that women would, you know, put up and shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it was a boss making a pass, or being passed over for promotions for jobs because some man came along, or because she wouldn't put out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we women have had to put up with for
Indeed.
A long, long time.
And what went along with that, and this is, and again, I didn't study carefully the responses of this, you know, that Spanish coach guy, but what goes along with it is a sense that it's not merely that he doesn't think it's disrespectful; he thinks it's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, he thinks women want it.
Right.
And if they don't, there's something wrong with them.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the part that is.
So until he can. Do the teshuvah.
Yes.
You know, the work that it takes, then he can't, then any apology is empty.
Exactly, yeah. And teshuvah, so let's bring it back around. Let's
mm-hmm.
return to returning here.
Yes.
Yeah, teshuvah indeed is all about that sense of, you know, I guess I'll throw in the notion of empathy has to be part of it. The notion that, okay, how I want to be with other people is in a way that is responsible, which means taking account of how I think they might feel, even though I can't know for sure. And that is that requires some ability to reflect on your own behavior, which is what this period of time in the Jewish year is really all
Yeah,
about.
reflection. Good
Reflection.
word.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
that was the word I was grasping for earlier that
Ah.
didn't come
Uh-huh.
to my ancient brain.
Yeah.
Yes.
And reflection, even, if you think about that metaphor of reflecting, it's like looking in a mirror, it's something coming back to you. And in the brain, that's how the neocortex works.
Yeah.
I remember learning about that decades ago, probably before parts of the brain had evolved, actually. That's how long ago I was in graduate school. I'm j joking slightly about that. But in terms of how signals in the parts of the brain that, for example, the limbic system, are much faster because they're closer.
Yeah.
And the neocortex is built on top of all of that. And signals go up and down and bounce back and forth in there, that they reflect
Yeah.
in through different structures. And that's how we form consciousness, and that's how we form our understandings of things.
And you can also look at it as if you're looking at a very still lake, and the reflection of what's above into what it looks like in the lake, you get a different perspective on it. You see it differently.
Yeah, you
So
do.
you get that two different things with reflection. So either when it's looking back at you, or the ability to see something in a way you never saw before.
Which is what this, again, what this time of year is about. And indeed, I'll pick up on what you just said. That's another way of saying, what's couples therapy? What is it? Or I'd almost say, what do I offer? I mean, there's a lot of ways I answer that. I often say, well, the main thing I offer is faith. Well, another main thing I offer, and this goes right to the very first question I ask people, which is
Yeah.
always unexpected. You know what I mean?
Right.
I won't even say what it is, folks. Read my book.
It's in
It's in the
the
book. Read it. It's not about communication. I have a whole chapter on that. I won't even say what it is. But the point of it is, when I ask that question, everybody, almost everybody, many, many people will say, oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that brilliant a question, frankly. I think it's an unexpected question. That's why it's a
It
good
well, it gets
question.
them to think.
It gets them to, exactly. It's like they're thinking, I'm going to say, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Or, tell me about yourselves,
Right.
which is a perfectly valid thing to say. I don't say that. I ask something else, and you can almost see the little bit of surprise on their faces, sort of like, oh, this is different. And what I am providing is a third party
Yeah.
who is, I was explaining that to a
Well, you're
couple
asking
yesterday
them to
too.
reflect.
I'm asking them to reflect,
Yeah.
precisely. I'm doing things that they're not expecting. I'm getting them out of the ruts that they're in terms of their narrative ruts that they're in, because I'm introducing things that sometimes out of left field that, well, another thing I talk about in my book is the fact that it's like improv theater.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. I don't know. I don't go in with a list of questions. I don't go in with a plan. I joked about that. I'm so glad at this point, folks. I think I mentioned this in one of my podcasts. I'm no longer accepting insurance. Apologies to folks who want to find someone with insurance. Now, I still have some openings. If you anybody listening to this, if you're not somebody who's an acquaintance or a friend, if you're interested in seeing me, you can go to my website, brucechalmer.com, and check it out. But that phenomenon of what was where was I going with that? I was going somewhere brilliant with that, whatever it
Not
was.
taking
Oh
insurance.
yeah, not thank you. Not taking insurance. And what insurance wants, if they were to do it like an audit of your notes, is they need to see a treatment plan.
Yeah.
And I was saying, well, the only trouble with doing a treatment plan for couples therapy is it's not treatment and there's no plan. Other than that, no problem. And I used to do it. I mean, I could, craft the language, but it's not treatment because
Yeah.
it's not, these are not medical issues mostly.
Right.
And it's not planned because you're responding to people on the fly, ideally in different ways from how anybody's thought of before. That's why it's
Yeah, I
like
mean,
improv.
it's almost like the insurance companies want a formula.
Yeah.
How many sessions do you think you're going to need
Oh
with
my
this
God,
person,
yes.
right?
Well, and they used to, managed care used to make you fill out a Mother May I form every X number of sessions. And after a few years, they dropped that because they were spending a massive amount of money and getting absolutely nothing from it. It wasn't making for fewer
It's
sessions, it was
crazy.
making for pissed off therapists,
Yeah.
often pissed off clients, and pissed off people on the other end of the phone. I felt bad for the people that I
Right?
would
Because
have to
they
talk
have
to
to
sometimes.
put up with, deal with all this
Oh, it was
stupidity.
ridiculous. And yet, let me put in a word for the insurance companies, believe it or not. I don't blame them. If what you're going
Yes.
to do, for example, is a treatment for a bad back. I don't blame them at all for insisting on a treatment plan. If what you want to do is treatment for diabetes, they know a lot about how diabetes is treated, and they're flexible enough to know, yes, sometimes
oh,
there
yes.
are complications.
Well, like you said, for medical stuff, yes.
For medical stuff, it makes sense.
Sometimes.
For treatment for COVID, they know enough now to, here's the course, here's why we'll pay for, you know, Paxlovid.
Right,
for,
you have strep throat,
right?
You get an antibiotic.
Exactly.
Hello.
And
but
if you don't, you
it's
don't.
It's not couples therapy, so.
No.
Couples therapy,
and,
you know, you can have a couple that comes in and two times you see them and they're like, oh, great. Okay.
Well, exactly.
And other times it's like years and they're just
yeah.
not getting
there. So about 10, 12 years ago, one of the insurance companies decided, of course, because everything has to be with metrics. So they decided they were going to sort of try and rate the people who were they're paying, you know,
uh-huh.
which again, I don't blame them.
Well,
they're
they
paying
have to
them.
Justify.
Right. I don't
why
blame
their
them for
money's
that.
Coming,
but
going.
What they did was they had it so that if you saw people too many times, that was bad.
Yeah.
But if you saw a person for one session or two sessions, they said, oh, you didn't engage with them. So that was bad. And I have had people that have come in and they've had one session. They said, oh, this was really helpful. Thank you. And they're done. You know,
right.
That does happen.
It does.
And it was just hilarious. It was just so ridiculous. So for, you know, for all of that, I'm glad to be, you know, done with that sort of thing. But what, so what, listen, this was the devil's bargain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I know. This was the devil's bargain
mm-hmm.
that psychologists and other therapists made 30, 40 years ago saying,
right.
well, we want to take insurance too, so we're going to pretend to be medical doctors, which we are not, nor should we be. And it, you know, the medical model does not work at
right.
all for couples therapy and doesn't work well even for individual therapy for most things. And so there we are. So teshuva and couples therapy.
Teshuva and couples therapy.
Hope I want to wish all of our viewers and listeners, in Jewish terms, what we would say this time of year is Gemar Chatima Tova,
right.
which is to say, may the final seal be good.
Right. And have an easy fast
and
if you're fasting.
Somkal, yes, have an easy fast. And for those of you who are not Jewish, may you be able to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in couples therapy or considering couples therapy, that's what a lot of it's going to be about. So let's just briefly plug our products again, just to mention them.
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't mention.
Oh, that's right.
We
did
not mention
our
merch. We have beautiful merchandise available on our website, ctin7.com. And for those of you who are watching this, we're holding up our beautiful Couples Therapy in 7-Word mugs with our logo on one side and our motto on the other, Be Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith, in the 11-ounce and 15-ounce sizes. It's also the merch. We also have T-shirts, tote bags.
We do.
And
for those of you who are just listening, you can see that. You can see pictures of that merch at that aforementioned
ctn7.com.
website. ctn7.com. Go to the shop tab, mm-hmm. and you will see all of our goodies there. I just so love to push the tote bags. Anyway,
tote
whatever.
Tote bags are great.
It's not like we make more from the tote bags.
The time.
But, you know.
And if you're new to our podcast, all our podcasts are available there as well.
That's right, ctn7.com. If you want to see the videos of them, you will see there's a link there that takes you to my blog on my website, brucechalmer.com. There's a blog. I always put up a post of the video of the session, which we also have on YouTube. And so those of you who are just hearing this, if you actually want to see what we look like and, you know, see Judy's beautiful face and see my face.
You're too sweet. And
yep.
Another thing that I wanted to mention is Bruce's newsletter.
Oh, absolutely.
So
right.
You can sign up for Bruce's newsletter, and when you do,
mm-hmm.
you can get a free PDF of this book that I'm holding up, 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Yes, it is a nice little booklet.
Right. It's also available for purchase on Amazon, but why
mm-hmm.
buy it when you can get it for free, just by signing up for Bruce's wonderful monthly newsletter.
Absolutely. And, you know, drop us a line and tell us what you think about this podcast, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rate us and all that kind of stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. Follow us, share us, tell all your friends.
Yep. And then one more word for Laria. I think we better mention Laria again.
Yes,
because otherwise, you know, she might complain in terms of what she's paying us for to do these ads. We want to make sure we do
she
her justice.
Might. That's
yes.
right.
The
Laria, blue tent, erotic
she
tales
has a
from the
sharp,
Bible.
She has a sharp part of her. You know, I've seen it come out on occasion.
Really?
You've never, because you've never been in the same room with her, but I've seen it. It's kind of sexy, actually, but it can be kind of sharp, you know, so.
Well, speaking of sexy,
Yeah.
if you want to have a good book to read in bed, either with a partner or alone,
Absolutely.
Check out The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible.
That's right. Available on Amazon or lariazilber.com,
L-A-R-I-A-Z-Y-L-B-E-R. In paperback, audio, and Kindle versions.
Absolutely. And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.